The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual host and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Para-X, its affiliates, or its sponsors. Your source for everything paranormal. Para-X.
And good evening, everybody. It is Monday night at 6 o'clock Central Time. You are listening to the Odyssey Files. I am your host, Michael O'Neill. And with me, as always, is my co-host, Dave Soering. How are you today, Dave?
I'm doing great, Mike. I hope everybody out there who's listening is doing fantastic as well, being as that we have a absolutely fantastic guest on tonight.
Absolutely. She is the brilliant, the inventive, the woman who still will not follow me on Twitter, no matter how many times I ask. And she is the star of Ghosts of Shepherdstown, Miss Elizabeth Saint. How are you, Elizabeth?
I'm good. How are you?
If I were any peachier, I would be a fruit basket. So I'm doing pretty good.
So that's good.
I just want to start out by saying, why don't you tell people where you are right now?
I'm standing in the middle of this graveyard. I don't know what its name is, but it happened to be across the street, so I thought it was the perfect location to do a paranormal radio show.
And you were correct.
A little ambiance.
Yeah, it really sets the mood,
yep.
Pretty much. So Elizabeth, why don't you tell us, just to start us off with, how did you get, into the paranormal, as a serious thing as opposed to growing up with experiences?
Yeah, because I did grow up with a lot of experiences, but it wasn't until I moved down to the Washington, D.C. area for a job with the DOD that I started getting into the paranormal. And it was mostly because I moved into this apartment that was really, it had a lot of activity. And up until that point in my life, I was honestly pretty good at ignoring any paranormal experiences I would have. But when I moved into this apartment, for whatever reason, this male entity that resided there was just not a very nice guy. And it really got to the point for me where I was like, I wonder if there's any groups out there I can reach out to. Maybe this is a part of my life I need to start exploring, because I got to the point where I just couldn't ignore it anymore. And I felt like something was pushing me into that direction. So that's when I first reached out and tried to find a group local to me, and that's how I found Maryland Paranormal Research.
So when you reached out to them, was it to join their team, or was it for them to come in and investigate your apartment?
No, it was to join the team. I was so used to activity up until that point in my life. It just really got to the point where I needed to figure out myself and kind of validate my own experiences, because I felt like I was going crazy most of the time. So I found that team, and what I loved about them was very data-driven team. And I needed that for myself, especially as an engineer, to kind of validate these very sensitive, very subjective feelings that I would get all the time when it came to the paranormal.
Yeah, Elizabeth, how long are you with them? Oh, I'm sorry, Dave. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, what kind of stuff, if you could talk about it, what kind of stuff was happening when you said it was kind of intense and wrapping up at your apartment and things were getting more and more intense? Was it just uncomfortable feelings, or was it actual touching, shoving, object manipulation? I mean, I'm just kind of curious what was going on.
Yeah, so it started... A lot of times, it's happened to me since I was a kid, but a lot of times spirits will try to come communicate with me through my dreams at first. So okay. It started off small like that, through my dreams. It was always about this male entity in my apartment. He kind of resided in the closet. I had this walk-through closet that went from the bedroom to the bathroom. And he always kind of lingered there. And then it kind of escalated to I'd wake up in the middle of the night with dreams about him, or just feeling like someone was in my room, and I'd see him standing at the doorway. And then that kind of escalated to my dog being bothered by him and, like, chasing somebody around the apartment and out the door. And then it got to the point where I was kind of hearing him. And the breaking point for me really was, I remember I was taking a shower, and I started hearing these heavy boot prints, like footprints, just coming into the bathroom. And I immediately froze up and thought to myself, oh my God, like someone must have broken into my house. But I don't hear my dog, which is weird because she's a small dog. And, you know, if she sees any kind of strangers or anything like that, she goes crazy. So I was like, oh my God, I hope my dog's okay. This doesn't make sense. I know I locked up before I took a shower. And then this man started whistling this tune, and it was very creepy. And I just felt him getting closer and closer and closer to the shower. And I froze and thought to myself, okay, I'm going to just fight for my life, I guess. I guess this is kind of it. I hope that I'm stronger than this guy. I don't care that I'm badass naked. I just need to, like, get out of my apartment. And of course, I'm like, okay, on the count of three. And by the time I started counting down, the footsteps stopped and the whistling stopped right on the other side of the shower curtain. And I was so prepared to have somebody be there. And I just pulled back the shower curtain, and of course, there was nobody there. And at that point, I was like, okay, this is getting to be ridiculous. I started spending less and less time at my apartment after that. And that was really when I started researching and finding a team that I felt would fit me best. What's crazy is I actually swapped living spaces with a friend of mine who I met through Maryland Paranormal Research. We would investigate together. He's one of the team members. And I didn't tell him about my experiences in the apartment at all. And after the first night, he calls me up the next morning. He's like, when were you going to tell me about the guy that lives in your closet? Nice. And I was honestly mortified. I felt so bad. I'm like, I'm so sorry. Part of me didn't really think he was real. But apparently it got really bad for him, where the spirit started getting physical with him and his now wife. And they had to get the apartment cleansed, and then it was fine after that. But it was just validation for me that I was actually experiencing what I thought I was experiencing, you know?
Yeah, no, that's very cool. Yeah, that's always great to have that second person in there being able to document the same stuff that you were doing or that was happening to you.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have told him either.
I know. Well, not to mention, I wanted to swap places with him. I'm not going to be like, oh, there could be possibly this spirit thing. That's so
how
bad.
Long,
I feel bad.
How long were you actually with NPR?
I guess it was like 2011? 2011? 2012? 2011, I believe. Yeah. And then up until the point I moved to Colorado last year. But I still consider myself to be a part of the team, because I still communicate with Hiram, who's the founder, all the time. Anytime I get a chance to work with them, I always try to. And I plan on coming back to the East Coast probably by the end of this year. So I'll probably start working with him again, to be honest. He's one of my favorite people. So
nice. Cool. So going back to something that you know, you had said, now you, when you moved to New York, it was for a modeling contract. What made you decide to go back to school for electrical engineering?
Yeah, I know. It's a little bizarre. So when I got out of high school, I wasn't really sure what I really wanted to do with my life. I actually went to school for like a month, and I was an art major, but that was only because I was really good at graphic design, and I thought I would go that route. And I actually withdrew from my classes, and I pursued this modeling career in New York City. And it was good. I grew up really fast from the experiences there, but it was definitely not what I wanted to do. After a few years, I decided, okay, I'm going to go back to school. Maybe now's a good time. I could figure out what I want to do with my life and everything like that. So I started out with computer programming or computer science, something like that. And I was required to take an intro to circuits class. And honestly, I just fell in love with it. So I immediately switched my major to electrical engineering, and that's kind of where it started for me. I think some people like to think that maybe the intrigue was there because I had been struck by lightning, and I don't know, I didn't really think about that much, but I just honestly loved it. I don't have anyone in my family that has a background in engineering, so I was never really exposed to it, but I love to work with my hands, and I just fell in love with the courses, so.
Yeah. Did I hear something that you got struck by lightning?
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing.
Yeah, actually twice, which is really messed up.
So you actually got hit, or it hit by you? Or did it actually hit you?
So the first time I was, clichely, I was on the golf course. I was in a golf tournament. And I remember calling up the clubhouse and being like, you know, there's these dark clouds coming in the distance. Do you think we should, like, mark our balls and come in? They're like, no, it'll be fine. Storm's not coming this way. 5 minutes later, it's like torrential downpour. I hadn't hit off my second ball yet. Everyone else had. So they were already, like, 100-plus yards ahead of me. I go down to mark my ball. I stand up, and I see honestly, it was, like, the most beautiful streaks of light around my face, and then that was it. I just remember coming to, standing up to this girl that was part of my group, screaming and yelling at me, like, do you have any idea what just happened to you? And I stand up, my clubs are like off on the ground away from me, and mind you, they were on my back when I got hit. And my first instinct, of course, is to go and reach for my clubs, and she starts screaming at me not to touch my clubs, and what she told me was the biggest bolt of lightning that she has ever seen just came down and directly hit me on top of my head. I think, obviously, the reason I probably got hit was because I had, you know, a bag of clubs on my back. But I think it also kind of saved me to an extent because it probably arced around me or something.
Right.
Which helps diffuse the blow a bit.
I thought for sure that you were going to say it saved you because you were having an awful round. Because that's an excuse that I would make.
That's really funny, no. Oh, man.
Wow. Hit by lightning twice.
Yeah, the second time was just through a window. I was on the computer. Don't put your computers by windows.
You know, I got the shades drawn, so maybe they can't see me.
Yeah, let's see. It's raining here, and I'm actually by a window. Maybe I'll move.
Well, that's what they say. They say if it's lightning out, you should not be by a window.
I never took that. I don't really believe them, whoever they are.
Yeah.
Nope, it happened. But I feel like I'm more susceptible now to it because I've had a strike around me since then. It's interesting.
Well, wow. I think it's pretty amazing that you actually got hit and that you're actually still here talking about it, because they say usually lightning strikes, you know, they're pretty detrimental. So.
Yeah. No, it's true.
I saw that guy.
I know. I have people walking by me in the graveyard. I feel bad.
So, before we get into Ghosts of Shepherdstown, I wanted to. I feel that I owe you a confession and an indirect apology for.
Okay.
For my behavior, when
what did you do?
When Ghosts of Shepherdstown first came out, or when it was first announced, I should say, I absolutely refused to watch it. I was it had nothing, you know, it had nothing to do with you. It was a complete thing of I figured that Nick Groff, obviously, who is, you know, your co-star. When he left Ghost Adventures, I was under, you know, I had a humongous hatred for all of them. And you know, as a paranormal investigator, you know, their antics and what they do. And I still do. You know, so when this was commercialized as a Nick Groff show, I was like, here we go. You know, he's going to go to town. He's going to do a bunch of dramatic things. Nothing's going to really be real. Nobody's going to get help, you know, which is, in my opinion, the main reason anybody should be a paranormal investigator is to help people. And so I absolutely refused, adamantly, to not watch that show. And so it started, and, you know, even Dave and my lead investigator at that time, Sean, would message me, and they'd be like, well, have you seen Ghosts of Shepherdstown? I'm like, nope. They're like, well, you really should, because it's really good. And even Dave was like, their evidence is phenomenal. And I'm like, no, it's Nick Groff. I'm not gonna watch. And I actually held out. I actually held out until like week four. You know, or maybe it was, I think it was Ray Ray's case.
And, yeah.
That was by sheer happenstance. I was bored. There was nothing on TV, and they were running a marathon to boot up to the new episode. And I was like, okay. I was like, it's only like 20 minutes left in the show. I'll watch. And we came to the end of the episode where you did your ceremony and everything was good. And I'm like, oh, I'm like, okay, I can watch this now because they are actually helping people, which I did not see coming. So, and I watched every episode after that. I watched it again this past weekend, including the return to Shepherdstown. So for judging a book by its cover and not giving you the credit that you guys deserve, I apologize.
That's very nice of you.
Well, I figured that I couldn't in good conscience be like, oh, I'm all about Ghosts of Shepherdstown. I love the show. And not just be like, yeah, I first boycotted it. I apologize. So,
Good. I love honesty. No, that's great. I mean, yeah, honestly, it was really there were a few things that intrigued me when I was approached by Chief King to do, you know, to do the show. And honestly, I wasn't for it. I didn't ever see my life going in that direction. Definitely not reality television, I guess you could say, you know. And I was, at that point in time, I was all about my team, Maryland Paranormal Research, and researching with them. I was afraid to be with a new group of people that I'd never worked with before, because I really feel like you should trust the people that you work with. Especially with some of the cases that I've had in the past where it became extremely important. But the aspects about the show that I liked was I felt like, number one, we were helping people, like you just said. And number two, I got a chance to not only explore the town, but to work with Chief King and like four guys in the force. It's a very, very small town. But That was definitely intriguing to me, and a big reason why I decided ultimately to be a part of it was because it was different than other shows. And my favorite thing about the show is definitely, it didn't matter where we went, we were always in communication with some spirits there at the location. And not only that, but then we were able to do this research and tell these beautiful stories and do these period reenactments of their lives. And, you know, a lot of these people you wouldn't know about otherwise. So, I mean, that's why I loved it.
Gotcha.
That sounds great. And I got a question for you. And this is kind of goes about for a lot of the shows that are out there, but specifically for this one. So how long does it take to actually put together an hour-long show for reality TV for like that?
How long does it take?
Yeah, I mean, like, are you guys there for like a week, you know, to put together an hour?
Yeah, so each one of our cases we worked on for about a week. Some were a little longer, some were a little shorter than others, but it was roughly around a week time frame, definitely. Okay. And it's crazy when you think about that, because you know, they do have the period reenactments, the travel time, the time in which we're talking to Dana, talking to Lori, talking to the clients, and then after all that, you get like 5 minutes of investigation time probably on the screen.
Right, right. How much time did you guys actually investigate, though?
Oh, God. We would always have a day dedicated to... usually our daytime sweeps, for the most part, would happen during the day. We'd go and interview with the clients, and then we'd take a few hours to go around and actually do our baseline sweeps of the house. Sometimes that would roll into a night investigation. Sometimes it would not. We'd have to schedule, obviously, a time that was good for them and convenient to come back and do a full night investigation. Night investigations would start probably, let's say between, probably like 4. Let's say around 4 p.m. But, and a lot of times we wouldn't get out until 4 o'clock the next morning. There were a couple of times where you might have started like 6, but then the sun was rising at 6 a.m. when we were leaving. So it really, like, it was really an all-night thing. And of course, some of that is dedicated to, you know, interviewing with the client if they're there. We do take an hour to eat.
It's important. Got to keep your energy up. Yeah.
You know, there's always the, you see us like have our little, like talks, I guess, during the midst of it all, where they pull you aside and ask you, you know, questions like, how are you feeling right now in the moment? And you're like, I just want to be investigating, leave me alone, but you do it anyways because it's for TV, you know?
Right.
But yeah, I mean, we were there for a long period of time, and that's something I liked about it too, was going back to the location multiple times, because I don't always get the chance to spend such a long period of time at a location. It's usually like one day. And what I liked is, like, we really engrossed ourselves in Shepherdstown, and we were there for months. So the longer I stayed there, the more I felt not only connected to the town, but I felt like more spirits wanted to come out and talk to us too. And I have this theory now that they kind of know that we're making a show, because so much stuff would happen, and it would just blow my mind, because things would happen that I hadn't experienced for the past 7 years that I've been investigating outside of Shepherdstown, you know? And I felt like they were showing off a little bit sometimes, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, totally.
I really wish during my investigations that they would try to show off. That they would dance in front of the camera and, you know, maybe sing a song on the recorders, but they do not. Maybe I should go in and try to, you know, make them believe that I'm doing like a documentary or something like that.
I mean, it wouldn't hurt to try. I think it does happen, because it was just some things were too much of a coincidence in my mind too. So I always felt like they knew, and they were helping us out sometimes.
So, while I was doing research on the show, I came across a lot of people who were suspicious of the show, because the town folk just seemed to be so accommodating to you guys. Were they warned? You know, did they have like a town meeting or whatever to discuss that you were coming?
Exactly. They did have a town meeting. They actually had to approve us even being there, because it's such a small town. It's very engrossed, and, like, you know, everybody knows everybody. If there's an issue, which a lot of people don't understand either, there's an issue in the town, they either call Chief King directly on his phone, or they call the mayor. It's very, very different than anything that I've experienced. But yeah, it's a very tight-knit group. There were obviously people in the town that probably didn't like us being there. But when we were there, everybody was really nice. They made us feel at home. And, it was overall a great experience. I could have seen it go a different way, because I've definitely visited small towns where you're like, you're an outsider and they treat you as such, but yep. It wasn't the case in Shepherdstown. Everybody was really great. And yeah, they did have to have a town meeting and approve us being there. That was stuff that was done probably way before I was even brought on board.
So when the ship was on, it was Sergeant King. Is he been promoted now to chief?
He is. He's chief now.
Nice. I like that. I like him.
It's so funny. People come into the town, and he says it's funny because a lot of people come in, and they come into the police office, and it was just right next. It's a part of town hall, but they'll come in and they'll be like, "Oh my god, you're like really police officer," and they're just shocked that he's actually that's like his job. I get a kick out of that.
I never doubted. So, did he like really reach out to like a production company and say, "I want to bring in paranormal investigators to this town, and I think it would be a good way to have a show and like kind of document this"? Or how did the actual premise of the show come up?
From my understanding, he definitely reached out to them. I think that they were there, honestly. I think the production team came out, I think, before that point in time, like I want to say almost a year before, or maybe slightly less than a year, to come see the town and see what he was talking about and get and interview people of the town to see what was really going on before even bringing us on board. So I think they did a lot of scouting beforehand just to make sure that it was actually a show that you could, you know, do. I mean, that makes sense in my mind. But I remember there was a newspaper article that was in the Shepherdstown Chronicle or the local paper there. And it was talking about them coming into town and thinking about producing a show based off of the spirits in the town. So yeah, it seems like they definitely came before that point.
Nice. And did Chief King actually select you, Nick, and Bill for this, or was that kind of like a production?
No, so what him and Nick told me is he obviously knew Nick from his previous work. He reached out to him, and what they really wanted to do was get local investigators involved. So they pulled me from Maryland Paranormal Research. That's how they found me in the first place, was through my team. And then they found Bill through, he was the founder of Greater Maryland Paranormal Society. I don't know if he still has his team anymore because of everything that's been going on, but that's how they found him as well. Two local teams. And I know that they were interviewing and talking with several other groups as well.
Very nice. I like that. Cause a lot of people,
yeah, I like that too.
A lot of people, I don't think understand how these shows get set up, especially one where they bring in a team to investigate an entire town.
Right, exactly. And I know I caught a lot of flack too, because, you know, if you look me up online, my IMDb will come up, and I think a lot of people had issues with the fact that they thought that I was just some actress hired for the show. And before I decided to be on the show, I thought to myself, like, man, that's all people are going to really think. They're not going to know that I've had these like lifetime of experiences, or that I actually am with the paranormal team. And I was really worried that my love for film would get in the way of the show, because I kind of understood that you don't really mix. You've done any kind of acting work in the past, they're not going to necessarily think that it's a good fit for a paranormal show. But I was hopeful that over time people would understand that this is like a big passion of mine, and it's something that I've been doing, you know, for so many years. So,
yeah, I was actually having this conversation with Dave before we came on the air about, you know, if you look at the backgrounds of a lot of people they choose for the paranormal shows, a lot of them are actors and actresses. And I was even told, I was at an event in Iowa, and I was told by the guy who was hosting it that, even Nick is, went to acting school. I don't know if that's true or not, but, I think to be on TV, even though it doesn't necessarily have anything to do with the paranormal investigation, you can be an actor and an actress and everything else and still be a good investigator.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's unfortunate when you have, when you have more than one passion that kind of contradicts itself.
I think it's just become that a lot of people are become very suspicious of Hollywood and how much they actually,
oh yeah,
and what's real and what's not, and so I am glad to and very, very happy to dispel any, you know, suspicion and whatnot that, you know, the Ghost of Shepherdstown was, you know, in some way staged or anything like that.
Right. No, me too.
Okay. So right now we have to take a quick break. You know, we'll be back probably in the next, I don't know, a minute and a half with Elizabeth Saint. We'll talk more about Ghosts of Shepherdstown and anything else that may come up. You're listening to The Odyssey Files on Para X.
My name is Greg Bakken. I'm a writer, a producer, and a paranormal investigator. My favorite way of communicating with spirits is through using the spirit box, also known as a ghost box. I invite you to listen to me every Wednesday at 10 p.m. Central for interviews with people in the paranormal community and beyond. Plus, I will also include as much of my spirit box evidence as I can during my show.
My name is Greg. Can you say Greg? Can you say Jeff?
Right. Jeff.
Join me every Wednesday at 10 p.m. Central Time for Minnesota Ghost Box, only on Para-X Radio.
In order for the light to shine so brightly, the darkness must be present. Tune in every Monday at 10 o'clock, The Dark Sun Rising, on the Para-X Radio Network.
Moments that we have left, we want to talk right down to earth in a language that everybody here can easily understand.
Your source for everything paranormal, Para X.
All right, and we're back with Elizabeth Saint from Ghost of Shepherdstown. You're listening to The Odyssey Files on Para X Radio. Dave, you're talking about a question from the chat room.
Yep, we just got a question that popped up here. One of our listeners would like to know, Elizabeth, how far back are the spirits that you're contacting? Is it last century or is it way before that?
You mean on the show?
Mom, let's direct it towards the show, yeah.
Yeah.
You know what? The 1800s come through a lot, I noticed.
Okay.
That's a pretty common time period in an early 1900s. Before that, now we're getting into a tricky question.
And why is
because
that?
Because I can't really talk about it to an extent.
This wouldn't have anything to do with like some upcoming news, would it?
Yeah, a bit. And we're okay. I'm hoping to announce something soon, but I will say that definitely in my recent investigations, been contacting something a few thousand years old. So
Wow. That's
been really, really exciting.
Wow.
Honestly. But hopefully I'll be able to announce that shortly.
Well, cool.
But no, the most common period is definitely around the 1800s, I found.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, yeah, it seemed a lot on the show. It was about the Civil War.
Yeah, obviously, yeah.
the person that just asked that question feels that we just got the scoop.
Yep, we just got the scoop. Yep,
we got the get.
It's so exciting to just, yep, you know, have to lie to people and ignore all the time, especially when if you're going to ask me about spirits, because recently I've been contacting some spirits that I'm super excited to share with the world.
Well, that's great. Is it something outside of the Ghost of Shepherdstown, or is it like all correlated to that?
I think this is the point in the conversation where I have to plead the fifth.
you're okay. Not at liberty to say.
She's not at liberty to say.
Right.
Yep. Yep. Destination America said no talking about any of this stuff. So, all right, let's change the topic here. So,
do we have any more questions about, I'm really interested in, you know, the thousand year old spirit. Thousands.
Oh, yeah, no. So I had recently I was communicating with this entity and, oh man, it's just so exciting. I can't give all the details, but it was funny because, because I asked this question, you know, like, how old are you or where do you, what time period do you come from? And the response that came through on audio was, I am 2000 years old. And this entity, I've actually not communicated just one location, but several different locations, the same thing. So that was really interesting to me.
Like, perhaps it's kind of intrigued by you and following you around kind of thing, moving with you?
No, I don't know about moving with me. Uh-huh. But I hope it'll make more sense in the future for everyone.
Okay, all right.
I'm sure she will fill in the blanks when you know they allow her to do so.
Right.
I mean, to be honest, I don't like that thing.
Well, here's another question popped up quick is... How do you determine the validity of the answers that you get? Is there a way that you can do that? Is it just experience that you have, or is there some way that you can say, yeah, that's a valid answer, I can run with that kind of thing?
You know what? I think it's interesting because I've even had spirits like flat out be lying to me, but it'd be an intelligent conversation, you know, and I'm thinking to myself, no, that's not true at all. Why are you even saying that to me? And then I've had spirits be smart asses to me as well. So,
yeah,
really
we've been
funny.
There.
So yep. Dave and I have been there.
Yeah, exactly. At one time I said, you know, can you confirm for me that we are like, let's see, we're in the state of Maryland right now. And through, audio comes through. It's like, oh, here's a smart one. I'm like, what the heck? I think sometimes what helps is I definitely try to ask more qualifying questions like that. You know, can you tell me, I know it's annoying, but can you just confirm for me maybe what street we're on, what town we're in, just something to validate that you are an intelligent entity communicating with me. And right. Then on top of that, you know, I think a lot of times it does help to have additional instrumentation around that will validate their presence, which is also kind of nice. But in terms of their answers, I don't know. Unless you're doing research on the land that you're actually on or know more about the house, that always helps too. If you already kind of know the answer.
Right, right.
Or later on can find it out. But aside from that, I don't really... It is difficult. It's hard. It's why we. I think that's what intrigues us a lot of the times too. It's like, well, we're gonna get to the bottom of this one.
Yeah.
We're gonna figure out who you are, where you come from.
Yeah, exactly. And why you're lying.
And why you're lying to me right now? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No.
So, Elizabeth, the shows in general, it's just see. Just seem to paint like just the story that kind of goes from episode one to episode six.
Mm-hmm.
Did that actually happen in that order? Or did you kind of learn this, and this, and it was just kind of put in that order to make a story?
No, though, the way the episodes went was exactly the order in which everything went. The first episode that we had was our first case. It was really interesting. That's what I mean. It was really interesting how things kind of worked out in a sense. And like I said before, it felt a lot of times like they already knew about it. They already knew about the show to some extent because some of our evidence I'm like, oh my God, like this is absolutely validating who I'd hope we'd communicate with at this location, knowing the history that Dana had just given us, you know? And too many things would fall into place in that regard, and that always threw me off and kind of messed with my head a bit, to be honest with you. Because we're going through this process, and I like the process because it allowed us to find connections between locations and town. And outside the show, I don't get the opportunity to really do that or look into that as much as I would like. So it was interesting to have it be like that. Yeah, I mean, from start to finish, that what people see is the exact order in which we took our cases.
Did you ever come up with, I mean, did you figure out the answer maybe before it showed up, or did you have like an inkling that, you know, these were all connected and it had to do with the run and everything else?
I honestly felt by the end of the episode, by the season finale, I felt that it was going in a different direction because of the experience that I had during the season finale down in the basement, which they didn't air the whole thing. But that was a pretty intense experience for me. I was downstairs at the basement of this location of this couple's house, and I was standing by what looked like a well, you know. And right before Shepherdstown, I had actually just given birth to my daughter, which a lot of people didn't know. And I think that this spirit felt a connection with me because I started getting flashes of imagery of this woman with her baby for some reason. And all of a sudden, I didn't remember anything. I completely blacked out. And apparently Bill went upstairs like a half hour later after trying to talk to me and console me and stuff. And he says to Nick, you know, you need to come downstairs to the basement. Like, there's something going on with Elizabeth. And what they told me was I was pacing back and forth in the basement talking about how sorry I was, that I had done something wrong, that, you know, I couldn't leave the basement because I couldn't leave my child behind. And I kept apologizing about something that I had done. And it wasn't until that I got out of the basement that I started to come to again. And this is only second time in my life that this had happened to me. Before, it was a previous case that I had had with the paranormal clergy. It was a very serious case in Vermont. But this was the second time in my life where I actually blacked out and did not remember anything, and some other spirit was channeling through me, which sounds crazy for me to say, but that's what happened. What's interesting about this is that I felt that the direction of the story was going more that route. And I remember interviewing the mayor that same week after my incident, and him telling me the story about a woman on that same street apparently got pregnant by another man that was not her husband and actually killed the baby in the well to hide the pregnancy.
Yeah.
And I feel like that, oh my God, I'm getting like chills just thinking about it. And I feel like that was more of the story. And I know the story kind of went with this woman who was accused of a witch and everything like that. But part of me honestly felt like it was still the same. Like, I was picking up on that woman. I felt that in my heart, you know, and I felt like that's the way the story was going, but it didn't end up that way on the show. I would have loved to dig more deeper into her and her life and what had happened there and why she maybe had so much anger and maybe why she was, you know, using the town run to travel. I mean, I don't know. Anything's possible. There's so much. The town run does run directly through the town. There's so many elements, you know, within the limestone of the town and foundations in which things are built. Anything is really possible at that point when you look at everything in that kind of way. But I just thought it was going into a different place that didn't happen. And I didn't feel like our job was really done there either. You know,
I got a quick question for you on when you said that she channeled through you. When you go to a site like that, do you leave yourself open for that possibility to allow that to happen? Or do you kind of keep yourself closed off to make sure that things like that don't happen to you? And this one and then it has to be something like really strong to be able to work its way through your, you know, through your, whatever your protection is, however you ground yourself.
Oh, that's a great question. Yeah, absolutely. I 100% close myself off and make sure that I don't leave myself too open. It's taken a long time for me to get to that point, though. In the beginning, I wasn't quite aware of myself as I am now. But I think the thing was that got to me was I started getting these like visualizations of this woman with her baby, which opened me up because as a mother, I mean, I was missing my daughter, Charlie, so much when we were in Shepherdstown. Even though I only lived an hour outside of Shepherdstown, it was still really hard. So I think, like, getting those images in my mind and feeling her pain for her baby, that completely opened me up, and that was it. That's all it really took, which is interesting when I look back at it.
Yeah, and so she just kind of got that little crack in the door and just woof, kind of welcomed herself right in, so to speak.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's how it felt.
Wow. So I can say I've never had that. So, but that kind of sounds scary, actually, a little bit, to have somebody be able to do that to you.
It's even weird to talk about. I feel like a little nuts. I don't know, talking about stuff like that, because I am very logical about things too. So, I just know it was an experience that I had that I have no memory of.
Huh.
Wow.
Aside from people telling me about it.
With with those experiences and that experience in general, is a good lead into a question that was just asked in the chat room. Would you consider Shepherdstown a place that you would live permanently?
Oh, that's so interesting. It's funny that that's a question, because honestly, I became so attached to Shepherdstown after being there for a long period of time. I considered moving there afterwards. There was some draw to it that I just couldn't really escape. I think it's because ultimately it did leave a big impression on me. But it was really hard to leave and be away for such a long period of time. It's only up until recently that I've actually gone back and visited. But I did think for a period of time that I was actually just going to move there. So.
And this is a follow-up question to that one. Do you know of any people that actually move out of the town because of the hauntings?
No, I don't think so. The only people that are constantly moving in and out are definitely the students that go to Shepherd University. And they're always interesting to talk to because they've all had a lot of experiences, especially in Miller Hall, which unfortunately I've never gotten the opportunity to investigate. And I didn't think that the whole salt lines thing was a thing until I interviewed so many people, and apparently it was quite common for some of the students to have in their dorm room entrance, which, I mean, I don't know. Is that never something that I did in my life. So it was interesting, you know, hearing somebody's story. I heard a story once where this guy said he felt like he was being followed down the hallway, and he had already had a salt line, you know, in place by his door entrance to his dorm room. And he felt like something was following him, like it was getting closer and closer and closer. He went into his dorm room, and it was like whatever it was just stopped on the other side of that salt line. I was like, really? You really feel that way? Like, it just seems like something to me that, I don't know, you'd hear from a movie or a TV show or something like that. Like, I didn't honestly think that there was something that people did. But no, apparently it really works for them. And it was really interesting to have that be a part of one of our episodes, too.
Yeah, I actually, I have heard that salt, for some reason, is supposed to symbolize, like, purity or something like that. And, you know, unclean spirits are not able to cross a line. I have never tried it, so I don't know for sure, but that's the rumor that I've always heard.
Yeah. It wasn't until recently that I had stepped... there was this medium that was using black salt to make sure that she got no attachments from the house that we were investigating. And I was like, oh, hell, I'll just stomp through the black salt with you. I might as well. But, yeah, I mean, up until that point, I had never really experimented with that kind of thing before. Doesn't hurt to try, though, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, no, it's just salt. Right? I mean, it isn't going to hurt you. Yeah. I mean, it's not going to, like, you know, cause any negative effects on you. So, yeah.
Best case scenario, I don't go home with a friend. Worst case scenario, it dirties my shoes a bit.
Great. Great way to look at it.
Pros and cons, Elizabeth. Pros and cons. Weigh the options.
Yep.
So, Dave, do you have any final questions about Ghost of Shepherdstown before we move on?
Nope. I was just looking at the time, and I was just going to mention to you, you know, we should probably move on and let Elizabeth kind of talk about some of her upcoming things that she's going to be at, or places she's going to be, you know, where people will be able to go visit her, go see her, talk to her.
Yep.
Yes.
Actually, I've got a great question that leads into this, and I can't believe I forgot to ask it. because of Ghosts of Shepherdstown, how drastically or how intensely has your life changed because of it?
I think the most beautiful thing about it has definitely been being able to participate in events that are all over the country and meeting so many different people in the paranormal community. And that was something that I didn't get a chance to obviously do before the show. And I love that aspect of it because, you know, even though there's so many people into the paranormal, I still feel like we're a tight-knit group at the same time.
Yeah. Unity.
It's like everybody knows everybody. And I love that. I think my favorite thing since the show has aired has definitely been going around to different cities and talking at different events and meeting different people and just getting a glimpse of what they're doing and what they're experimenting with to further the community and to ultimately finding the answers we're all been looking for, you know?
Absolutely. Do you ever find it to be overwhelming?
No, it has. The only time it's been overwhelming is when people get all crazy in a nasty way. I think when the show first came out, I got a lot of negative feedback, and I think it's ultimately because, like I said before, people didn't really know who I was or what I was all about. But a lot has changed since that point in time too. I think it helped getting out more and giving little tech talks along the way. And my passion, you know, since then has definitely been focusing on ghostly gadgets and paranormal equipment in the community. So,
well, since you brought it up, why don't you, like, I don't think a lot of people know that, you know, you actually put your electrical engineering degree to work. And so you are actually designing your own, like, line of paranormal equipment.
Yes, yeah, definitely. It's been a lot of hard work. But it all started with Nick actually asking me if I wanted to build something for Paranormal Lockdown. He actually filmed Paranormal Lockdown after Shepherdstown, which a lot of people don't know since Lockdown came out first. But I thought to myself, oh my God, what a perfect opportunity. You know, I've been an engineer all this time and I haven't put together anything. And since then, it's really like ignited my fire in a sense to give back in that way. So I've been experimenting with all different kinds of things and building all different kinds of devices. I hope to be updating my website soon, ghostlygadgets.com, to kind of reflect all the new tech that I've been developing, but I'm really hoping to get everything out to everybody soon. I want it to be different, though. I think what's lacking in the community in terms of technology is definitely... I hate that you don't know what your equipment's made of. You don't know what goes inside of it. You don't know the components. You don't know the schematics, you don't know how it's programmed, and I feel like people need to know that information. I want to be very transparent with the equipment that I put out, and I want people to be able to build on it if they want to. Do you know what I mean?
Yep.
Yeah.
And that's pretty rare, you know, because a lot of people, they want to take their equipment and say, this is the piece you need, this is the only piece you need, you know, come get mine because I have the best.
Right. And no one knows if they have the best. That's, you know... It's very subjective.
We'll be the first team to say there are no such thing as a paranormal expert.
Right,
we're all exactly. Learning. There are no experts. If there were experts, we'd all have the answers already. So we're all just growing together and learning together.
Yeah,
so
nobody would ever say, "Well, that was weird," because they would already know what it was and why it happened.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
So,
I agree.
And you're going to put a lot of this stuff out next year?
Yeah, I'm definitely aiming for next year. I was hoping for the end of this year, but I think it's going to be beginning of next year now.
Perfect. But, perfect. I look forward to it.
I'm excited. I'm really excited. I think it's all good things.
And let me be the first to volunteer that if you want any field work on your equipment, Dave and I will be happy to try that out.
I need product testers, definitely. I need feedback.
I volunteer.
We're in it. Trust me.
If it's a good thing or like Elizabeth, no, this is shit. We need to move on to something else.
Oh, believe me, if there's anything Dave and I do well, it's tell the truth.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah. And I don't know if it's just because of who we are, but every site we go to and everything we do, we just get an absolute ton of activity. So, you know, we've never been on a case when we haven't pulled out phenomenal evidence, visual,
amazing.
Yeah,
I
audio.
Like you guys.
Yeah, it's interesting. I don't know. There's some kind of connection there. So,
yeah. What can I say? We're awesome.
but we will product test for you. I mean, not to harp on it, but I mean that would be cool.
Perfect. Okay, good. And I mean honest people.
Yeah. You found two here.
Yeah.
So we got about 5 minutes left, maybe a little less. So Elizabeth, why don't you tell us just some of the places that you're going to be at, if people, you know, Paracons and whatnot, if people want to come out and meet you and say hello.
Yeah, definitely. I think my first one coming up is May 13th. I'm going to the New Jersey Para Unity Expo. I should be going in June to Long Island, New York. What else do I have? Oh, I'm going to California to Preston Castle. It is in August.
I'm going to
Michigan in October. And there's a few I haven't listed yet, but I am always updating elizabethsaint.com/, I think it's upcoming. If you go to elizabethsaint.com, you can definitely see my upcoming events because I'm always updating it.
So where
maybe
where
another
about
trip
Michigan
to Farrar in June?
Wait, Farrar in June?
Like I said, maybe another trip to Farrar in June?
Maybe. I don't know. That's possible.
Like June 3rd or 2nd? When
June,
is it, Mike?
June 2nd and 3rd, maybe?
2nd and 3rd, maybe?
Is that when you guys are going?
Yeah.
Yeah, I have a two-day event that I've scheduled there.
Okay. I don't have anything going on right now there.
See, there you go.
Sign her up,
another scoop. We got another scoop, Dave.
Yeah, we're scooping out today. That's cool.
Jeez.
Perfect. Wonderful.
We're going to have to do an event here in Minnesota since you haven't been to Minnesota. We're going to have to do something in Minnesota and get you up here. You know, something fun and interesting.
Like the Irvin.
Yeah.
Have you ever heard of the William H. Irvin ship? William A., I'm sorry.
No, actually, I have not.
It's a big ore ship that's now a museum and like a haunted maze on Halloween up in Duluth. You know, it's right on the Superior, Lake Superior. And I've been there multiple times and it's unreal.
I'm going to have to go then.
I think you should.
That's a good place.
We'll be there. We'll
I got
be there
the
in. May,
I got
so.
The in with the Historical Society.
Yeah, okay. We'll be there in May.
In May, okay.
Yep. May 13th is actually the day we're going, but we
May,
can pretty
May
much.
May 13th. I mean, look at this.
May 13th. We can discuss it later because
okay,
now that we're now that we're Twitter buddies.
Well, now I got to get on Twitter.
Okay. And then you can get on me again about not following you.
Yeah, not following. Yeah.
I'm
going
to have to call you.
That's quite all right. I don't blame you at all.
I guess I'll have to actually
anything,
get my Twitter account fired
anything
up
that
now.
Associates with you, I just take you anyway. you know, we're gonna wrap up here. So I just want to wish everybody a good night. We got about a minute left. You know, again, if you want to get a hold of Dave and I, you can contact us on Facebook at Odyssey Files Radio, or me, my team, Odyssey Paranormal Society, or odysseyparanormalsociety.com. This interview will be on the on my website probably in the next couple days. So, you know, with that said, you know, Dave, did you want to send anybody off?
No, I just wanted to say thank you very much for your time, Elizabeth. I really appreciate it, and it was a pleasure to get to meet you and get to talk to you. And you know, hopefully somewhere down the road we might even meet each other at an event or something. It'd be fun.
I would love that. It would be great to meet you guys. We'll have to investigate together, especially if all the spirits are coming to you.
Well, I don't think you'd be disappointed. It's been an interesting run for me. So,
alrighty. So, from all of us at the Odyssey Files, coming up next is Matt Gesso with Paracaves. Everybody, have a good night.